Mary Jane.
And Tiffany the Less.
And Kathy.
We're at the Kasbah and the Atari Lounge with...
My name is Paul Smith. I'm with Dengue Fever. I'm the drummer.
Hi, I'm Chow Nimol. I'm a singer from Dengue Fever.
Kind of a big event in the world. We want to know, did you guys get a chance to watch the royal wedding?
I did. Last night. I did.
The royal wedding didn't quite make my priority list today. I valued sleep and eating a little higher. It's a good luck to them, but I didn't see it.
Is there a particular message that Dengue Fever is trying to get across to the universe?
You know, we want people to enjoy the art that we make. Yeah. We want people to, do what we do on stage, which is just express ourselves in an honest fashion and hope that, you know, we can have kind of a communication between us and our audience. And that's about it.
The music that you guys are creating is Cambodian pop rock or psychedelic?
Yeah, it is. People have called it Cambodian psychedelic rock is the kind of term that's thrown around. I think over the years we've evolved, and that might be an outdated tag, but we leave the taglines up to the journalists, so whatever they want to come up with now, it's cool with me. Cambodian psychedelic rock does, you know, it explained where we came from, but mm-hmm. I don't think it completely explains where we're going.
So Cannibal Courtship, your fans can expect that this is different.
Yeah, it is different. I mean, the band's expanding in terms of allowing more influences that we always had within us. And it's always, our influence has kind of gone through a filter, and that filter is loosening up a little more, and things are getting through that didn't used to get through. So therefore, our music is organically growing in directions that we all wanted to go in inherently.
Are there any key elements that have stayed?
Absolutely. Mainly Nimal is the key element that has stayed. I mean, the influence that she brings, being a singer who can sing in Khmer and English and has such a strong Cambodian influence mm-hmm. by default, is an anchor for everything we do. So we get to go off in different directions, but she anchors us and ties us to what we started with. So
sometimes when I got my feeling is on, and then I do a cappella, and then Zach bring the guitar and be recording, and we try to do like make some of the new songs for us. And sometimes I got some idea. I told those guys in the band about my story, about another story, and we put in there. Yeah.
So tell us about your story. I read that you have a particular song that touches really close to home.
Yeah, and I think that's the song we call Sister on the Radio. Mm-hmm. And this song is very personal for me and my family. We played when I was a kid, and then I played to Thailand. And then my sister, my bigger sister, and so we played to Thailand as always like fighting, like Cambodian fighting, it's right. Khmer Rouge. I think I remember that I was like 19 years old, and one day and my mom heard my sister's voice on the radio, and then she started crying, and she just told me about, that's your sister still alive, and she's in the radio right now. And then I think I surprised, because I don't know I don't know how to figure out like my sister in the radio, because my sister in the radio, how she's on the radio. And then I look at my mom start crying.
She thought she was physically in the radio. She thought somehow her sister had shrunk down and was in the radio physically, like how kids, you know, say, how did you get in the TV if you see someone you know on TV? So that's, she wasn't 19 years old. You were 19 months or three?
Nine years old.
You were nine?
9 or 10 years old.
Oh, okay, 9 years old.
was your sister in?
And was she in Thailand also?
No, she in Cambodia.
She was still there.
Yeah, and my mom and my brothers. And we live in Thailand, in a refugee camps in Thailand, yeah. After the Khmer Rouge and Vietnam took over, and then, yeah, so...
Well, to sort of change subjects back to your new album, you had mentioned that you're loosening up your filters. What have you guys been incorporating into this new album that you hadn't before?
I hear more English.
Yes,
right?
Your
English is great, by the way.
It's I think this cannibal courtship is... So we just done about a couple shows today, couple days ago. And I think it's everything in rock and everything in I have to sing in English. I have to sing perfectly. And I have to do everything into Orient to happy and dancing with us. And make them surprise in a different we do before. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, English, obviously, as her English gets better, we feel more and more comfortable writing songs in English. And, you know, there's other influences creeping in. I think I grew up on jazz and funk and hip-hop, and although in the past I would kind of intentionally stay away from some of that stuff, I think on this album I just went for it and let things be more of a juxtaposition, essentially. But I'm sure if you asked everybody, they'd all come up with a different answer, and, you know, and maybe that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. Is there anything in specific maybe you'd like to play with in the future?
In terms of a style or genre or influence or whatever. No, I mean, you know, it's when you get in the studio and you get in that headspace, we are trying to make sure we don't have preconceived ideas and sell ourselves short of what we're capable of. You know, it's easy to say, well, that's not a Dengue Fever song, or that's not a Dengue Fever part or something. You know, people won't know or get confused by that. But you have to figure out maybe you can incorporate it some way and not overthink it. So we get in the studio, keep an open mind, and whatever comes out at that time, we try and honor it. But no, we don't have any preconceived future directions that we're planning on going, no.
So on your new album, we see that you're in the cover and you have this instrument. Tell us what your fans named the instrument and just tell us a little bit more about it.
Yes, we call Chapai Dong Wei. I mean, the long necks from Cambodian traditional and folk music. So Matt make one together with the guitar.
Mel Bergman made it.
Yeah, Mel made together with the rock guitar in a American guitar.
And what's it called?
Chapai Dong Wei. And Mr. Dong.
Master Dong.
I'm calling them Mr. Dong because that's why I make a joke of them.
Yeah.
It's only me, no love, but Mr. only me that I call them Mr. Dong. But the Master Dong is his name, Master Dong, not Mr. Dong.
I like Mr. Dong.
Yeah, and then they laugh at me because I call from, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have been playing together for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. Have you developed any band quirks over the years along the way?
Oh, God, I think I'm too deep involved to know. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we have in terms of even musical quirks or kind of just the way we function
musical
as a family.
Quirks, maybe when you're performing live.
Yeah, I mean, I think quirks is a perspective thing, because to me they would be completely normal, and someone else would be like, "That's weird or quirky." So I don't know.
We know each other because we all be drunk and goodbye.
First of all,
no, I mean okay, you have fun, and you know, basically we've been playing a two minis band in the festival at the club. We just see each other about one day, and next show, if you see another band, and then you guys sound great, and they say to us, "You guys sound great," but we don't really. It's for me, I never remember at all. The next day, you know.
Yeah, it's been a lot of shows, 10 years. Yeah. But yeah, we do operate as a family, and every family does have their quirks and their fights and their, you know, our personalities. Luckily, none of us are egomaniacs, and none of us are drug addicts, so that allows us to, you know, stay together. and keep doing what we're doing. But it's we have a lot of different personalities, and we definitely butt heads, and you know. But we're all friends at the end of the day, and we love each other, and it's very much a family at this point.
Well, then maybe do you have any pre-show rituals to get you pumped up for a show?
Yeah, before big shows, we just get in a huddle, kind of, if we have drinks, you know, say a little cheers. Nimal always offers the gods some fruit and some incense, and says a prayer for us.
Water and candies, banana, orange, and lies, and incense. And if I, when I have the big show, I will put everything, so... That's make me feel good.
The other night at a show, she forgot to light the incense and do the whole ritual, and she made a bunch of mistakes, and she said it was the God's fault. It wasn't her fault. She forgot to say her prayer, so it wasn't her fault.
Yeah, he's right.
And how do you pick out your beautiful dresses?
From traditional Cambodia, and I like to look... And I like to watch fashion TV and dresses on stage, and some little fancies and sparkly. That's when I like the mermaid. That's when I, you know, I'm just everything. I, you know, I've been when I saw the dress, and then I'm that's the dress. I should be the, you know, to do like this, but it's not the same thing, but a little similar. And then I bought the material in here, and I sent to Cambodia to make it for me.
She has most of her dresses made. She picks fabrics, she sees things, and most of them she has made. You know.
Okay. Are there any designers right now that you're really into?
In here, and I don't have it, but in Cambodia I have it. Yeah.
Well, I heard that we've got a bit of a karaoke star. And so I was wondering, what would you guys sign up to sing if you ended up in a karaoke bar?
I would hide somewhere in a corner, as drummers do. And if I had to sign up, I mean, I don't know. I really grew up on a lot of hip-hop. Like, if there was, like, a song, there's a bunch of hip-hop, early hip-hop I know, you know, every word to. So I would have to search for something like that. Nimal, on the other hand, could sing probably any pop song on the lap, like any like Celine Dion or like what song would you pick at karaoke? What song do you sing?
I remember that we went to play in Salt Lake City, and then we stayed the whole time.
Where? Oh, Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City, and then Ethan and I we went to eat dinner, and no, I think we went to drink at the bar, karaoke bar. And then they singing and they laughing and they collapse their hands, and then Ethan say, "You wanna try a song?" I say, "I don't know how to sing because I just know about the love songs." And then I sing Celine Dion. I know, Celine Dion and Selena. So I'm singing. And then those guys, the owner say, "Oh, you should be the singer." Yeah, say, and then Ethan told him, "We play a band tonight. Is you guy wanna?" Check it out, and they come up and say, "Oh, y'all sound like you a singer. You know how to sing." That's all. But they don't say I'm singing the correct English. Uh-huh. They don't say, but they can hear my sound. Yeah, it's funny. Ethan told me the lyrics. He told me that that's, you know, because I don't know how to read English that much.
So he was feeding you the lyrics.
Feeding. Yeah, okay. He gave me in the bag. The Mema, like, yeah, it's fun.
Well, do you guys have a favorite musical memory? Maybe it doesn't have to be with the band, but maybe as an individual, something that sticks out.
My favorite musical memory happens to be with this band. When we were in Cambodia in 2005 for the first time, and we were filming the documentary we made, Sleepwalking Through the Mekong, and we had this show in Tonle Basak on this kind of this crazy, beautiful stage that was made from all auto parts. All the lights were old tail lights, and they had done an amazing job. And it hadn't been used in years, and they were wiring it up for us to have a free concert. And it's basically just a huge slum. It's gone now, but it was all like, you know, lean-to tin houses and whatnot. And we had a concert there, and it was just really surreal. And these kids were all standing behind my drum set while I was playing. These kids from Cambodia Living Arts that we were performing with, and that we do work for. or help do benefits for, and they were watching me and just smiling, watching like every move, and they were talking to each other and kind of imitating me. And I just never had that perspective. I didn't, like, usually, you know, I'm playing in rock clubs and you just don't think about the impact you're having on the people that much. But I felt like it was having some, and this is before, I have kids now, but I didn't have kids at the time. And I was, it just felt like having some sort of meaningful impact beyond music. And that gave me a great feeling. Nimal, what about you?
Yes, I think it's a, it, for me, it's, I remember that when we went to play in San Francisco.
When? Which time?
There 100 times. I think 5 years ago. Yeah. I remember that we got a crowded energy for the people. Like that's my first time. I never have the audience, the, you know, come up and, you know, make us dance and like energy.
Was it a rickshaw?
Rickshaw, yeah. I think I remember that's a rickshaw. Yeah. Yeah. So that's made me feel like, oh, I thought I'm not gonna not do it because I'm saying Khmer. They don't understand, but they can dance, they can smile, they can clap their hands, and that's why they make me feel like, oh, I need to keep going. Probably it is the right thing I keep. Yeah, that's why. That's San Francisco.
And I know you guys are on tour right now for your new album, but do you have anything really exciting coming up, or do you foresee yourselves going in the future?
I don't know about the future, but I can see people smiling, and we played in the last 2 weeks ago in San Francisco. We never go back for a long time, and we played the Fillmore, and I can hear the audience, you know, they smiling, they dancing with us, but I don't know the future, what's going on, but I can feel like I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I'm not too far in the future, but we are going to England for a Meltdown Festival and Glastonbury Festival, and I think we're all pretty excited about that. The Meltdown Festival is curated by Ray Davies from the Kinks, who's a fan of ours, and he had, you know, put us on the bill. So we're all, and it's in a beautiful, beautiful, like, 1,000-seat Queen Anne Theater, I think it's called, or something, and I saw pictures of it, it's just stunning. And so I think we're all looking forward to that show.
Well, I have three really silly questions I always ask everybody. Okay. And the first is, do you have any slang terms that you overuse?
Yeah, I mean, I do, because I used to work in a recording studio, and I worked on a ton of rap and hip-hop records with, like, Snoop and Exhibit on Queen Latifah. And this guy I used to work with all the time, we did all the Snoop jokes, all the nizzle. And every once in a while, I just can't stop doing it. I know it's extremely dated and should not be said anymore, but I keep doing it once in a while because it's just, my friend moved to North Carolina and I don't have him anymore to do it with, so I end up doing it to people who just look at me like I'm an idiot. But, so, yeah, I need to stop that, but I still do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk. Silly slang, you use?
Silly slang.
Like terms, words like, you know, slang like.
Slang, you know, slang it, but I know what it means.
Like, you know, in Khmer, you guys use bong for a brother, but it's not necessarily exact. Slang is like, God, how do you explain slang?
Raddy, not here.
Yeah, we need Raddy.
Yes. The merchandise. Slang.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. It's like silly terms. Just silly terms you use with your friends.
A word that means something else than it originally meant to mean. Like I'm playing charades or something.
Yeah. Like I'm starting the recorders, the new album, like English translate to Khmer. And it's hard because they...
That's right, yeah. You use slang or colloquialism, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. What can I do?
Do you use one a lot? I'm trying to think of something you say a lot. She probably doesn't come out, but I don't think she has one in English.
Who likes the party?
Oh, that's not slang, but you're right.
Yeah.
She's been saying that. She started saying that. Okay. We have
shake your body hot.
It started out as a joke, and now she can't stop saying it in the middle of the set. So, there you go.
Yeah.
Mr. Dong.
Yeah, Mr. Dong.
You like the party, Mr. Dong?
Yeah. Who likes the party, Mr. Dong?
Okay. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I still use the izzle all the time.
I'm not the only one.
Guilty. Do you? What's your drink of choice?
I'm going through a change. I've been drinking a lot of red wine, and not drinking anywhere as much as I used to.
Yeah.
But we all, as a whole, the band always asks for Maker's Mark just about because it's kind of universal, and we all tend to drink whiskey.
I like to drink white wine before on stage, but sometimes they don't have a white wine for us. They have beer and whiskey, and then now I start with the whiskey a little bit.
We forced her into whiskey.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I mean, like, no choice.
She used to drink Jaeger, but we didn't know she didn't
before,
like it. Years ago, we put it on the rider because we asked her, because someone had told her, what did someone tell you? It's good for your throat or something.
Yeah.
But she didn't like it, but we didn't know that, so we put it on the rider. So we kept getting Jaegermeister every show, and nobody drinks it. And we were like, why do you want Jaeger? Like,
5 years ago. Jaeger everywhere.
She didn't say anything for years. She didn't say
Yeah.
And one day she's like, I don't really like Jaegermeister. We were like, okay, let's get rid of it.
Yeah, and then Jägermeister, it make me one time. That's why I don't want Jägermeister, but I don't tell them. And they write out it. Oh, Jägermeister, no. Okay, no choice, drink it. Because I don't drink beer at all. Yeah.
Okay, and how do you guys feel about eyeliner?
Eyeliner.
On women or men?
Up to you.
For me personally, I'm just too lazy to do anything. Yeah, women or men, if you like it and makes you look good, go for it.
Eyeliner?
Yep. You spend hours putting
on eyeliner. Oh. Yeah, depend on where the dress is. Sometimes I wear blue, I put my eyeliner and eyeshadow with the blue.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wear the purple, I need to put the purple. That's why I spend an hour. It's not easy, you know. That's for me. I try to be look good on stage and make the audience happy.
Yeah.
That's all.
Years ago, the first time Nimal ever had a makeup artist, we were shooting a Verizon commercial years ago. And she kept going back into the makeup. She had tons of makeup on. And we were done shooting, and she just kept going back into the makeup trailer and getting her makeup changed. And we were like, we got to go. And she'd go back in and like, one more time.
She just loved it. I don't run to the makeup. Touch up. Please touch up, touch up, touch up. That's a long time ago. It's funny. Now I don't need it anymore.
So thanks, guys. And we're piratepods.com. If you could give us your best pirate impression.
Arr.
Give you a pirate impression.
Pirate impression.
You know what a pirate is?
Oh, a pirate.
Patch over the eyes.
Oh yeah. In the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, the pirate. Johnny Depp.
Yeah. Give us your Johnny Depp impression.
Yeah, give it Johnny.
How does he sound?
He sounds like a mean guy.
Like a mean guy.
Yeah.
All right. Do your impression of a mean guy.
Yeah, sound like a mean.
Let's hear a sentence.
Awesome. Oh, like no, I can't. Hi, Johnny.